One gopi perfectly imitated how Krishna would call the cows who had wandered far away, how he would play his flute, and how he would engage in various sports. The others congratulated her with exclamations of, "Well done! Well done!" Another gopi, her mind fixed on Krishna, walked about with her arm resting on the shoulder of a friend and declared, "I am Krishna. Just see how gracefully I move." "Don't be afraid of the wind and rain," said one gopi. "I will save you." And with that, she lifted her shawl above her head. One gopi climbed on another's shoulders and, putting her foot on the other's head, said, "Go away from here, O wicked snake. You should know that I have taken birth in this world just to punish the envious." Then another gopi spoke up. "My dear cowherd boys, look at this raging forest fire. Quickly close your eyes and I will easily protect you." One gopi tied up her slender companion with a flower garland and said, "Now I will bind this boy who has broken the butter pots and stolen the butter." The second gopi then covered her face and beautiful eyes, pretending to be afraid. While the gopis were thus imitating Krishna's pastimes and asking Vrindavan's creepers and trees where Krishna, the Supreme Soul, might be, they happened to see his footprints in a corner of the forest. The gopis said, "The marks of a flag, lotus, thunderbolt, elephant goad, barley corn, and so forth on these footprints clearly distinguish them as belonging to that great soul, the son of Nanda Maharaj." The gopis began following Krishna's path, as shown by his many footprints. But when they saw that these prints were thoroughly intermixed with those of his dearmost consort, they became perturbed and spoke as follows. "Here we see the footprints of some gopi who must have been walking along with the son of Nanda. He must have put his arm on her shoulder, just as an elephant rests his trunk on the shoulder of an accompanying she-elephant. Certainly this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead, Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. Oh girls, the dust of Govinda's lotus feet is so sacred that even Brahma, Shiva, and the goddess Rama take that dust upon their heads to dispel sinful reactions. These footprints of that special gopi greatly disturb us. Of all the gopis, she alone was taken away to a secluded place, where she is enjoying the lips of Krishna. Look, we can't see her footprints over here. It's obvious that the grass and sprouts were hurting the tender soles of her feet, and so the lover lifted up his beloved. Please observe, my dear gopis, how in this place lusty Krishna's footprints are pressed more deeply into the ground. Carrying the weight of his beloved must have been difficult for him. And over here, that intelligent boy must have put her down to gather some flowers. Just see how in this place, dear Krishna collected flowers for his beloved. Here he has left the impression of only the front part of his feet, because he was standing on his toes to reach the flowers. Certainly Krishna sat down here with his girlfriend to arrange her hair. The lusty boy must have made a crown for that lusty girl out of the flowers he had collected." Shukadeva Goswami continued, "Lord Krishna enjoyed with that gopi, although he enjoys only within, being self-satisfied and complete in himself. Thus, by contrast, he showed the wretchedness of ordinary lusty men and hard-hearted women." As the gopis wandered about, their minds completely bewildered, they pointed out various signs of Krishna's pastimes. The particular gopi whom Krishna had led into a secluded forest when he had abandoned all the other young girls began to think herself the best of women. "My beloved has rejected all the other gopis," she thought, "even though they are driven by Cupid himself. He has chosen to reciprocate with me alone." As the two lovers passed through one part of the Vrindavan forest, the special gopi began feeling proud of herself. She told Lord Keshava, "I cannot walk any further. Please carry me wherever you want to go." Thus addressed, Lord Krishna replied, "Just climb on my shoulder." But as soon as he said this, he disappeared. His beloved consort then immediately felt great remorse. She cried out, "O master, my lover, O dearmost, where are you? Where are you? Please, O mighty young one, O friend, show yourself to me, your poor servant." Shukadeva Goswami said, "While continuing to search out Krishna's path, the gopis discovered their unhappy friend close by. She was bewildered by separation from her lover. She told them how Madhava had given her much respect, but how she then suffered dishonor because of her misbehavior. The gopis were extremely amazed to hear this. In search of Krishna, the gopis then entered the depths of the forest as far as the light of the moon shone. But when they found themselves engulfed in darkness, they decided to turn back. Their minds absorbed in thoughts of him, they conversed about him, acted out his pastimes, and felt themselves filled with his presence. They completely forgot about their homes as they loudly sang the glories of Krishna's transcendental qualities. The gopis again came to the bank of the Kalindi. Meditating on Krishna and eagerly hoping he would come, they sat down together to sing of him. Chapter 31, The Gopi Songs of Separation. Gopya uchu jayati tedikam jannana vrajakshayata indara sasratrahi jayati drishyatam dikshutavakasta hijutasavastam vachindati sharudu dashi hai sarajata sat sabasi joda dashi mushadrisha sudhatanapati shulka dasika vadadanignado nehakindadha Vishjalapayan Vyara Rakshasan Varshamadatan Vaijitanala Vishmayatmajan Vishutomayan Vishabatevayam Rakshitamahu Nakala Gopikanandano Bhavan Nakala Dehinamantaratmadrik Vikanasatito Vishagupthiye Sakarudevan Satvatam Kule Vajjanati han vidyoshitam vijjanasmaya dvansanasmata Vajjasake bhavat kinkarismano jabaduhananam charudashya. The gopi said, O beloved, your birth in the land of Braja has made it exceedingly glorious, and thus Indira, the goddess of fortune, always resides here. It is only for your sake that we, your devoted servants, maintain our lives. We have been searching everywhere for you, so please show yourself to us. O Lord of Love, in beauty your glance excels the whirl of the finest, most perfectly formed lotus within the autumn pond. O bestower of benedictions, you are killing the maidservants who have given themselves to you freely, without any price. Isn't this murder? O greatest of personalities, you have repeatedly saved us from all kinds of danger, from poisoned water, from the terrible man-eater Agha, from the great rains, from the wind demon, from the fiery thunderbolt of Indra, from the bull demon, and from the son of Maya Danava. You are not actually the son of the gopi Yashoda, O friend, but rather the indwelling witness in the hearts of all embodied souls. Because Lord Brahma prayed for you to come and protect the universe, you have now appeared in the Satvata dynasty. O best of the Vrishnis, your lotus-like hand, which holds the hand of the goddess of fortune, grants fearlessness to those who approach your feet out of fear of material existence. O lover, please place that wish-fulfilling lotus hand on our heads. O you who destroy the suffering of Braja's people, O hero of all women, your smile shatters the false pride of your devotees. Please, dear friend, accept us as your maidservants and show us your beautiful lotus face. Your lotus feet destroy the past sins of all embodied souls who surrender to them. Those feet follow after the cows in the pastures and are the eternal abode of the goddess of fortune. Since you once put those feet on the hoods of the great serpent Kalia, please place them upon our breasts and tear away the lust in our hearts. O lotus-eyed one, your sweet voice and charming words, which attract the minds of the intelligent, are bewildering us more and more. Our dear hero, please revive your maidservants with the nectar of your lips. The nectar of your words and the descriptions of your activities are the life and soul of those suffering in this material world. These narrations, transmitted by learned sages, eradicate one's sinful reactions and bestow good fortune upon whoever hears them. These narrations are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. Certainly those who spread the message of Godhead are most munificent. Your smiles, your sweet loving glances, the intimate pastimes and confidential talks we enjoyed with you, all these are auspicious to meditate upon, and they touch our hearts. But at the same time, O deceiver, they very much agitate our minds. Dear master, dear lover, when you leave the cowherd village to herd the cows, our minds are disturbed with the thought that your feet, more beautiful than a lotus, will be pricked by the spiked husks of grain and the rough grass and plants. At the end of the day, you repeatedly show us your lotus face, covered with dark blue locks of hair and thickly powdered with dust. Thus, O hero, you arouse lusty desires in our minds. Your lotus feet, which are worshipped by Lord Brahma, fulfill the desires of all who bow down to them. They are the ornament of the earth, and in times of danger they are the appropriate object of meditation. O destroyer of anxiety, please put those lotus feet upon our breasts. O hero, kindly distribute to us the nectar of your lips, which enhances conjugal pleasure and vanquishes grief. That nectar is thoroughly relished by your vibrating flute and makes people forget any other attachment. When you go off to the forest during the day, a tiny fraction of a second becomes like a millennium for us because we cannot see you. And even when we can eagerly look upon your lotus face, so lovely with its adornment of curly locks, our pleasure is hindered by our eyelids, which were fashioned by the foolish creator. Dear Achyuta, you know very well why we have come here. Who but a cheater like you would abandon young women who come to see him in the middle of the night, enchanted by the loud song of his flute? Just to see you, we have completely rejected our husbands, children, ancestors, brothers, and other relatives. Our minds are repeatedly bewildered as we think of the intimate conversations we had with you in secret, feel the rise of lust in our hearts, and remember your smiling face, your loving glances, and your broad chest, the resting place of the goddess of fortune. Thus we experience the most severe hankering for you. O beloved, your all-auspicious appearance vanquishes the distress of those living in Braj's forests. Our minds long for your association. Please give to us just a bit of that medicine which counteracts the disease in your devotees' hearts. O dearly beloved, your lotus feet are so soft that we place them gently on our breasts, fearing that your feet will be hurt. Our life rests only in you. Our minds, therefore, are filled with anxiety that your tender feet might be wounded by pebbles as you roam about on the forest path. Chapter 32, The Reunion. Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, having thus sung and spoken their hearts out in various charming ways, the gopis began to weep loudly. They were very eager to see Lord Krishna. Then Lord Krishna, a smile on his lotus face, appeared before the gopis. Wearing a garland and a yellow garment, he directly appeared as one who can bewilder the mind of Cupid, who himself bewilders the minds of ordinary people. When the gopis saw that their dearmost Krishna had returned to them, they all stood up at once, and out of their affection for him, their eyes bloomed wide. It was as if the air of life had re-entered their bodies. One gopi joyfully took Krishna's hand between her folded palms, and another placed his arm, anointed with sandalwood paste, on her shoulder. A slender gopi respectfully took in her joined hands the betel nut he had chewed, and another gopi, burning with desire, put his lotus feet on her breasts. One gopi, beside herself with loving anger, bit her lips and stared at him with frowning eyebrows, as if to wound him with her harsh glances. Another gopi looked with unblinking eyes upon his lotus face, but even after deeply relishing its sweetness, she did not feel satiated, just as mystic saints are never satiated when meditating upon the Lord's feet. One gopi took the Lord through the aperture of her eyes and placed him within her heart. Then, with her eyes closed and her bodily hair standing on end, she continuously embraced him within. Thus immersed in transcendental ecstasy, she resembled a yogi meditating upon the Lord. All the gopis enjoyed the greatest festivity when they saw their beloved Keshava again. They gave up the distress of separation, just as people in general forget their misery when they gain the association of a spiritually enlightened person. Encircled by the gopis, who were now relieved of all distress, Lord Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, shone forth splendidly. My dear King, Krishna thus appeared like the super soul encircled by his spiritual potencies. The Almighty Lord then took the gopis with him to the bank of the Kalindi, who, with the hands of her waves, had scattered piles of soft sand upon the shore. In that auspicious place, the breeze, bearing the fragrance of blooming kunda and mandara flowers, attracted many bees, and the abundant rays of the autumn moon dispelled the darkness of night. Their heartache vanquished by the ecstasy of seeing Krishna, the gopis, like the personified Vedas before them, felt their desires completely fulfilled. For their dear friend Krishna, they arranged a seat with their shawls, which were smeared with the kumkum powder from their breasts. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for whom the great masters of mystic meditation arrange a seat within their hearts, took his seat in the assembly of gopis. His transcendental body, the exclusive abode of beauty and opulence within the three worlds, shone brilliantly as the gopis worshipped him. Sri Krishna had awakened romantic desires within the gopis, and they honored him by glancing at him with playful smiles, gesturing amorously with their eyebrows, and massaging his hands and feet as they held them in their laps. Even while worshipping him, however, they felt somewhat angry, and thus they addressed him as follows. Some people reciprocate the affection only of those who are affectionate toward them, while others show affection even to those who are indifferent or inimical. And yet others will not show affection toward anyone. Dear Krishna, please properly explain this matter to us. Lord Krishna said, so-called friends who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish. They have no true friendship, nor are they following the true principles of religion. Indeed, if they did not expect benefit for themselves, they would not reciprocate. My dear slender-waisted gopis, some people are genuinely merciful or, like parents, naturally affectionate. Such persons, who devotedly serve even those who fail to reciprocate with them, are following the true, faultless path of religion, and they are true well-wishers. Then there are those individuals who are spiritually self-satisfied, materially fulfilled, or by nature ungrateful or simply envious of superiors. Such persons will not love even those who love them, what to speak of those who are inimical. But the reason I do not immediately reciprocate the affection of living beings, even when they worship me, O gopis, is that I want to intensify their loving devotion. They then become like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it, and who thus becomes so anxious about it that he can think of nothing else. My dear girls, understanding that simply for my sake you had rejected the authority of worldly opinion, of the Vedas, and of your relatives, I acted as I did only to increase your attachment to me. Even when I removed myself from your sight by suddenly disappearing, I never stopped loving you. Therefore, my beloved gopis, please do not harbor any bad feelings toward me, your beloved. I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service, even within a lifetime of Brahma. Your connection with me is beyond reproach. You have worshipped me, cutting off all domestic ties, which are difficult to break. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your compensation. Chapter 33, The Rasa Dance. Shukadeva Goswami said, when the cowherd girls heard the Supreme Personality of Godhead speak these most charming words, they forgot their distress caused by separation from him. Touching his transcendental limbs, they felt all their desires fulfilled. There on the Yamuna's banks, Lord Govinda then began the pastime of the Rasa Dance in the company of those jewels among women, the faithful gopis, who joyfully linked their arms together. The festive Rasa Dance commenced with the gopis arrayed in a circle. Lord Krishna expanded himself and entered between each pair of gopis. And as that master of mystic power placed his arms around their necks, each girl thought he was standing next to her alone. The demigods and their wives were overwhelmed with eagerness to witness the Rasa Dance, and they soon crowded the sky with their hundreds of celestial airplanes. Kettle drums then resounded in the sky while flowers rained down and the chief Gandharvas and their wives sang Lord Krishna's spotless glories. A tumultuous sound arose from the armlets, ankle bells, and waist bells of the gopis as they sported with their beloved Krishna in the circle of the Rasa Dance. In the midst of the dancing gopis, Lord Krishna appeared most brilliant, like an exquisite sapphire in the midst of golden ornaments. As the gopis sang in praise of Krishna, their feet danced, their hands gestured, and their eyebrows moved with playful smiles. With their braids and belts tied tight, their waists bending, their faces perspiring, the garments on their breasts moving this way and that, and their earrings swinging on their cheeks, Lord Krishna's young consorts shone like streaks of lightning in a mass of clouds. Eager to enjoy conjugal love, their throats colored with various pigments, the gopis sang loudly and danced. They were overjoyed by Krishna's touch, and they sang songs that filled the entire universe. One gopi, joining Lord Mukunda in his singing, sang pure melodious tones that rose harmoniously above his. Krishna was pleased and showed great appreciation for her performance, saying, "Excellent, excellent."
Then another gopi repeated the same melody, but in a special metrical pattern, and Krishna praised her also. When one gopi grew tired from the rasa dance, she turned to Krishna, standing at her side holding a baton, and grasped his shoulder with her arm. The dancing had loosened her bracelets and the flowers in her hair. Upon the shoulder of one gopi, Krishna placed his arm, whose natural blue lotus fragrance was mixed with that of the sandalwood pulp anointing it. As the gopi relished that fragrance, her bodily hair stood on end in jubilation, and she kissed his arm. Next to Krishna's cheek, one gopi put her own, beautified by the effulgence of her earrings, which glittered as she danced. Krishna then carefully gave her the betel nut he was chewing. Another gopi became fatigued as she danced and sang, the bells on her ankles and waist tinkling. So she placed upon her breast the comforting lotus hand of Lord Achyuta, who was standing by her side. Having attained as their intimate lover, Lord Achyuta, the exclusive consort of the goddess of fortune, the gopis enjoyed great pleasure. They sang his glories as he held their necks with his arms. Enhancing the beauty of the gopis' faces were the lotus flowers behind their ears, the locks of hair decorating their cheeks, and drops of perspiration. The reverberation of their armlets and ankle bells made a loud musical sound, and their chaplets scattered. Thus the gopis danced with the Supreme Lord in the arena of the rasa dance, as swarms of bees sang in accompaniment. In this way, Lord Krishna, the original Lord Narayan, master of the goddess of fortune, took pleasure in the company of the young women of Braja by embracing them, caressing them, and glancing lovingly at them as he smiled his broad, playful smiles. It was just as if a child were playing with his own reflection. Their senses overwhelmed by the joy of having his physical association, the gopis could not prevent their hair, their dresses, and the cloths covering their breasts from becoming disheveled. Their garlands and ornaments scattered, O hero of the Kuru dynasty. The wives of the demigods, observing Krishna's playful activities from their airplanes, were entranced and became agitated with lust. Indeed, even the moon and his entourage, the stars, became astonished. Expanding himself as many times as there were coward women to associate with, the Supreme Lord, though self-satisfied, playfully enjoyed their company. Seeing that the gopis were fatigued from conjugal enjoyment, merciful Krishna lovingly wiped their faces with his comforting hand. The gopis honored their hero with smiling glances, sweetened by the beauty of their cheeks and the effulgence of their curly locks and glittering golden earrings. Overjoyed from the touch of his fingernails, they chanted the glories of his all-auspicious transcendental pastimes. Lord Krishna's garland had been crushed during his conjugal dalliance with the gopis and colored vermilion by the kumkum powder on their breasts. To dispel the fatigue of the gopis, Krishna entered the water of the Yamuna, followed swiftly by bees who were singing like the best of the Gandharvas. He appeared like a lordly elephant entering the water to relax in the company of his consorts. Indeed, the Lord had transgressed all worldly and Vedic morality, just as a powerful elephant might break the dikes in a paddy field. In the water, Krishna found himself being splashed on all sides by the laughing gopis, who looked at him with love. As the demigods worshipped him by showering flowers from their airplanes, the self-satisfied Lord took pleasure in playing like the king of the elephants. Then the Lord strolled through a small forest on the bank of the Yamuna. This forest was filled to its limits with breezes carrying the fragrances of all the flowers growing on the land and in the water. Followed by his entourage of bees and beautiful women, Lord Krishna appeared like an intoxicated elephant with his she-elephants. Although the gopis were firmly attached to Lord Krishna, whose desires are always fulfilled, the Lord was not internally affected by any mundane sex desire. Still, to perform his pastimes, the Lord took advantage of all those moonlit autumn nights, which inspire poetic descriptions of transcendental affairs. Parikshit Maharaj said, "O Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord of the universe, has descended to this earth along with his plenary portion to destroy irreligion and re-establish religious principles. Indeed, he is the original speaker, follower, and guardian of moral laws. How then could he have violated them by touching other men's wives? O faithful upholder of vows, please destroy our doubt by explaining to us what purpose the self-satisfied Lord of the Yadus had in mind when he behaved so contemptibly." Shukadeva Goswami said, "The status of powerful controllers is not harmed by any apparently audacious transgression of morality we may see in them, for they are just like fire, which devours everything fed into it and remains unpolluted. One who is not a great controller should never imitate the behavior of ruling personalities, even mentally. If out of foolishness an ordinary person does imitate such behavior, he will simply destroy himself, just as a person who is not Rudra would destroy himself if he tried to drink an ocean of poison. The statements of the Lord's empowered servants are always true, and the acts they perform are exemplary when consistent with those statements. Therefore, one who is intelligent should carry out their instructions. My dear Prabhu, when these great persons who are free from false ego act piously in this world, they have no selfish motives to fulfill. And even when they act in apparent contradiction to the laws of piety, they are not subject to sinful reactions. How then could the Lord of all created beings, animals, men, and demigods, have any connection with the piety and impiety that affect his subject creatures? Material activities never entangle the devotees of the Supreme Lord, who are fully satisfied by serving the dust of his lotus feet. Nor do material activities entangle those intelligent sages who have freed themselves from the bondage of all fruitive reactions by the power of yoga. So how could there be any question of bondage for the Lord himself, who assumes his transcendental forms according to his own sweet will? He who lives as the overseeing witness within the gopis and their husbands, and indeed within all embodied living beings, assumes forms in this world to enjoy transcendental pastimes. When the Lord assumes a human-like body to show mercy to his devotees, he engages in such pastimes as will attract those who hear about them to become dedicated to him. The cowherd men, bewildered by Krishna's illusory potency, thought their wives had remained home at their sides. Thus, they did not harbor any jealous feelings against him. After an entire night of Brahma had passed, Lord Krishna advised the gopis to return to their homes. Although they did not wish to do so, the Lord's beloved consorts complied with his command. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. Thus he will quickly become sober and conquer lust, the disease of the heart. Chapter 34. Nanda Maharaj saved and Shankarachuda slain. Shukadeva Goswami said, one day the cowherd men, eager to take a trip to worship Lord Shiva, traveled by bullock cart to the Ambika forest. After arriving there, they bathed in the Saraswati and then devotedly worshipped with various paraphernalia the powerful Lord Pashupati and his consort, Goddess Ambika. The cowherd men gave the Brahmins gifts of cows, gold, clothing, and cooked grains mixed with honey. Then the cowherds prayed, may the Lord be pleased with us. Nanda, Sunanda, and the other greatly fortunate cowherds spent that night on the bank of the Saraswati, strictly observing their vows. They fasted, taking only water. During the night, a huge and extremely hungry snake appeared in that thicket. Slithering on his belly up to the sleeping Nanda Maharaj, the snake began swallowing him. In the clutches of the snake, Nanda Maharaj cried out, Krishna, Krishna, my dear boy, this huge serpent is swallowing me. Please save me, who am surrendered to you. When the cowherd men heard the cries of Nanda, they immediately rose up and saw that he was being swallowed. Distraught, they beat the serpent with blazing torches. But even though the firebrands were burning him, the serpent would not release Nanda. Then the Supreme Lord Krishna, master of his devotees, came to the spot and touched the snake with his foot. The snake had all his sinful reactions destroyed by the touch of the Supreme Lord's divine foot, and thus he gave up his serpent body and appeared in the form of a worshipable Vidyadhara. The Supreme Lord Rishikesh then questioned this personality, who was standing before him with his head bowed, his brilliantly effulgent body bedecked with golden necklaces. My dear sir, said Krishna, you appear so wonderful, glowing with such great beauty. Who are you? And who forced you to assume this terrible body of a snake? The serpent replied, I am the well-known Vidyadhara named Sudarshan. I was very opulent and beautiful, and I used to wander freely in all directions in my airplane. Once I saw some homely sages of the lineage Angira Muni. Proud of my beauty, I ridiculed them, and because of my sin they made me assume this lowly form. It was actually for my benefit that these merciful sages cursed me, since now I have been touched by the foot of the supreme spiritual master of all the worlds, and have thus been relieved of all inauspiciousness. My Lord, you destroy all fear for those who, fearing this material world, take shelter of you. By the touch of your feet, I am now free from the curse of the sages. O destroyer of distress, please let me return to my planet. O master of mystic power, O great personality, O lord of the devotees, I surrender to you. Please command me as you will, O supreme God, lord of all lords of the universe. O infallible one, I was immediately freed from the Brahman's punishment simply by seeing you. Anyone who chants your name purifies all who hear his chanting, as well as himself. How much more beneficial, then, is the touch of your lotus feet? Thus receiving the permission of Lord Krishna, the demigod Sudarshan circumambulated him, bowed down to offer him homage, and then returned to his heavenly planet. Nanda Maharaj was thus delivered from peril. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, "The inhabitants of Braja were astonished to see the mighty power of Sri Krishna. Dear King, they then completed their worship of Lord Shiva and returned to Braja, along the way respectfully describing Krishna's powerful acts." Once, Lord Govinda and Lord Rama, the performers of wonderful feats, were playing in the forest at night with the young girls of Braja. Krishna and Balaram wore flower garlands and spotless garments, and their limbs were beautifully decorated and anointed. The women sang their glories in a charming way, bound to them by affection. The two lords praised the nightfall, signaled by the rising of the moon and the appearance of stars, a lotus-scented breeze, and bees intoxicated by the fragrance of jasmine flowers. Krishna and Balaram sang, producing the entire musical scale simultaneously. Their singing created happiness for the minds and ears of all living beings. The gopis became stunned when they heard that song. Forgetting themselves, O King, they did not notice that their fine garments were becoming loose and their hair and garlands disheveled. While Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram thus played according to their own sweet will and sang to the point of apparent intoxication, a servant of Kuvera named Shankachuda came upon the scene. Even as the two lords looked on, Shankachuda brazenly began driving the women off toward the north. The women, who had accepted Krishna and Balaram as their lords, began to cry out to them. Hearing their devotees crying out, "Krishna, Rama!" and seeing that they were just like cows being stolen by a thief, Krishna and Balaram began to run after the demon. The lords called out in reply, "Do not fear!" Then they picked up stones and quickly pursued that lowest of Guhyakas, who swiftly ran away. When Shankachuda saw the two of them coming toward him like the personified forces of time and death, he was filled with anxiety. Confused, he abandoned the women and fled for his life. Lord Govinda chased the demon wherever he ran, eager to take his crest jewel. Meanwhile, Lord Balaram stayed with the women to protect them. The mighty lord overtook Shankachuda from a great distance as if from nearby, and then with his fist, the lord removed the wicked demon's head together with his crest jewel. Having thus killed the demon Shankachuda and taken away his shining jewel, Lord Krishna gave it to his elder brother with great satisfaction as the gopis watched. Chapter 35, The Gopis Sing of Krishna as He Wanders in the Forest. Shukadeva Goswami said, "Whenever Krishna went to the forest, the minds of the gopis would run after him, and thus the young girls sadly spent their days singing of his pastimes." Vama bahukta vama kaporal valgitam vadadalapata venam komalanka divadashitamagam gopi iriyati yatta mukunda yomayana vanitasa hasinha vismatasa tupadaya salanda kama magana samabhuta chitta kashmalam yudapasmita nivya Ahanta chittama balasuna teram halahasa udasistira vinyutnam nasuna layamata jananam namudu yahi kunjita venu vrindisho vajavishamaga garo venu vajavita chetisa aratam dadashtaka balajita karna nindita lakata chittama vasam The gopi said, when Mukunda vibrates the flute he has placed to his lips, stopping its holes with his tender fingers, he rests his left cheek on his left arm and makes his eyebrows dance. At that time, the demigoddesses traveling in the sky with their husbands, the siddhis, become amazed. As those ladies listen, they are embarrassed to find their minds yielding to the pursuit of lusty desires, and in their distress, they are unaware that the belts of their garments are loosening. O girls, this son of Nanda who gives joy to the distressed bears steady lightning on his chest and has a smile like a jeweled necklace. Now please hear something wonderful. When he vibrates his flute, Braj's bulls, deer, and cows, standing in groups at a great distance, are all captivated by the sound, and they stop chewing the food in their mouths and cock their ears. Stunned, they appear as if asleep or like figures in a painting. My dear Gopi, sometimes Mukunda imitates the appearance of a wrestler by decorating himself with leaves, peacock feathers, and colored minerals. Then, in the company of Balaram and the cowherd boys, he plays his flute to call the cows. At that time, the rivers stop flowing, their water stunned by the ecstasy they feel as they eagerly wait for the wind to bring them the dust of his lotus feet. But like us, the rivers are not very pious, and thus they merely wait with their arms trembling out of love. Krishna moves about the forest in the company of his friends, who vividly chant the glories of his magnificent deeds. He thus appears just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exhibiting his inexhaustible opulences. When the cows wander onto the mountainsides and Krishna calls out to them with the sound of his flute, the trees and creepers in the forest respond by becoming so luxuriant with fruits and flowers that they seem to be manifesting Lord Vishnu within their hearts. As their branches bend low with the weight, the filaments on their trunks and vines stand erect out of the ecstasy of love of God, and both the trees and the creepers pour down a rain of sweet sap. Maddened by the divine honey-like aroma of the tulsi flowers on the garland Krishna wears, swarms of bees sing loudly for him, and that most beautiful of all persons thankfully acknowledges and acclaims their song by taking his flute to his lips and playing it. The charming flute song then steals away the minds of the cranes, swans, and other lake-dwelling birds. Indeed, they approach Krishna, close their eyes, and, maintaining strict silence, worship him by fixing their consciousness upon him in deep meditation. O goddesses of Braja, when Krishna is enjoying himself with Balaram on the mountain slopes, playfully wearing a flower garland on the top of his head, he engladdens all with the resonant vibrations of his flute. Thus he delights the entire world. At that time, the nearby cloud, afraid of offending a great personality, thunders very gently in accompaniment. The cloud showers flowers onto his dear friend Krishna and shades him from the sun like an umbrella. O pious Mother Yashoda, your son, who is expert in all the arts of herding cows, has invented many new styles of flute playing. When he takes his flute to his bimber-red lips and sends forth the tones of the harmonic scale in variegated melodies, Brahma, Shiva, Indra, and the other chief demigods become confused upon hearing the sound. Although they are the most learned authorities, they cannot ascertain the essence of that music, and thus they bow down their heads and hearts. As Krishna strolls through Braja with his lotus petal-like feet, marking the ground with the distinctive emblems of flag, thunderbolt, lotus, and elephant gold, he relieves the distress the ground feels from the cow's hooves. As he plays his renowned flute, his body moves with the grace of an elephant. Thus we gopis, who become agitated by Cupid when Krishna playfully glances at us, stand as still as trees, unaware that our hair and garments are slackening. Now Krishna is standing somewhere counting his cows on a string of gems. He wears a garland of tulsi flowers that bear the fragrance of his beloved, and he has thrown his arm over the shoulder of an affectionate cowherd boyfriend. As Krishna plays his flute and sings, the music attracts the black deer's wives, who approach that ocean of transcendental qualities and sit down beside him. Just like us cowherd girls, they have given up all hope for happiness in family life. O sinless Yashoda, your darling child, the son of Maharaj Nanda, has festively enhanced his attire with a jasmine garland, and he is now playing along the Yamuna in the company of the cows and cowherd boys, amusing his dear companions. The gentle breeze honors him with its soothing fragrance of sandalwood, while the various Upadevas, standing on all sides like panegyrists, offer their music, singing, and gifts of tribute. Out of great affection for the cows of Braja, Krishna became the lifter of Govardhan Hill. At the end of the day, having rounded up all his own cows, he plays a song on his flute, while exalted demigods standing along the path worship his lotus feet, and the cowherd boys accompanying him chant his glories. His garland is powdered by the dust raised by the cow's hooves, and his beauty, enhanced by his fatigue, creates an ecstatic festival for everyone's eyes. Eager to fulfill his friend's desires, Krishna is the moon arisen from the womb of Mother Yashoda. As Krishna respectfully greets his well-wishing friends, his eyes roll slightly as if from intoxication. He wears a flower garland, and the beauty of his soft cheeks is accentuated by the brilliance of his golden earrings and the whiteness of his face, which has the color of a butterberry. With his cheerful face resembling the moon, Lord of the Night, the Lord of the Yadus moves with the grace of a regal elephant. Thus he returns in the evening, delivering the cows of Braja from the heat of the day. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, O King, thus during the daytime the women of Vrindavan took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna, and those ladies' minds and hearts, absorbed in him, were filled with great festivity. Chapter 36, The Slaying of Arishta, the Bull Demon. Shukadeva Goswami said, the demon Arishta then came to the coward village. Appearing in the form of a bull with a large hump, he made the earth tremble as he tore it apart with his hooves. Arishtasura bellowed very harshly and pawed the ground. With his tail raised and his eyes glaring, he began to tear up the embankments with the tips of his horns, every now and then passing a little stool and urine. My dear king, clouds hovered about sharp-horned Arishtasura's hump, mistaking it for a mountain. And when the cowherd men and ladies caught sight of the demon, they were struck with terror. Indeed, the strident reverberation of his roar so frightened the pregnant cows and women that they lost their fetuses in miscarriages. The domestic animals fled the pasture in fear, O king, and all the inhabitants rushed to Lord Govinda for shelter, crying, Krishna, Krishna! When the Supreme Lord saw the cowherd community distraught and fleeing in fear, he calmed them, saying, Don't be afraid. Then he called out to the bull demon as follows. You fool! What do you think you're doing, you wicked rascal, frightening the coward community and their animals when I am here just to punish corrupt miscreants like you? Having spoken these words, the infallible Lord Hari slapped his arms with his palms, further angering Arishta with a loud sound. The Lord then casually threw his mighty serpentine arm over the shoulder of a friend and stood facing the demon. Thus provoked, Arishta pawed the ground with one of his hooves and then, with the clouds hovering around his upraised tail, furiously charged Krishna. Pointing the tips of his horns straight ahead and glaring menacingly at Lord Krishna from the corners of his bloodshot eyes, Arishta rushed toward him at full speed, like a thunderbolt hurled by Indra. The Supreme Lord Krishna seized Arishtasura by the horns and threw him back 18 steps, just as an elephant might do when fighting a rival elephant. Thus repulsed by the Supreme Lord, the bull demon got up and, breathing hard and sweating all over his body, again charged him in a mindless rage. As Arishta attacked, Lord Krishna seized him by the horns and knocked him to the ground with his foot. The Lord then thrashed him as if he were a wet cloth, and finally he yanked out one of the demon's horns and struck him with it until he lay prostrate. Vomiting blood and profusely excreting stool and urine, kicking his legs and rolling his eyes about, Arishtasura thus went painfully to the abode of death. The demigods honored Lord Krishna by scattering flowers upon him. Having thus killed the bull demon Arishta, he who was a festival for the gopis' eyes entered the coward village with Balaram. After Arishtasura had been killed by Krishna, who acts wonderfully, Narada Muni went to speak to King Kamsa. That powerful sage of godly vision addressed the king as follows. Yashoda's child was actually a daughter, and Krishna is the son of Devaki. Also, Rama is the son of Rohini. Out of fear, Vasudeva entrusted Krishna and Balaram to his friend Nanda Maharaj. and it is these two boys who have killed your men. Upon hearing this, the master of the Bodhis became furious and lost control of his senses. He picked up a sharp sword to kill Vasudeva. But Narada restrained Kamsa by reminding him that it was the two sons of Vasudeva who would cause his death. Kamsa then had Vasudeva and his wife shackled in iron chains. After Narada left, King Kamsa summoned Keshi and ordered him, "Go kill Rama and Krishna." The king of the Bodhis next called for his ministers, headed by Mushtika, Chanura, Shala, and Toshala, and also for his elephant keepers. The king addressed them as follows, "My dear heroic Chanura and Mushtika, please hear this. Rama and Krishna, the sons of Anakadundubi, are living in Nanda's cowherd village. It has been predicted that these two boys will be the cause of my death. When they are brought here, kill them on the pretext of engaging them in a wrestling match. Erect a wrestling ring with many surrounding viewing stands, and bring all the residents of the city and the outlying districts to see the open competition. You, elephant keeper, my good man, should position the elephant Kubalya Pida at the entrance of the wrestling arena and have him kill my two enemies.